Welcome to thejournal.ie's The Explainer, where every week we take a deep dive into a different news story. I'm Laura Byrne, and this week, the state inquiry into the Bill Keneally case. What have we learned so far? Well, although the name Bill Keneally may not be familiar to all in this country, it's one that still carries a weight for the many survivors of his abuse. The 73-year-old, a prolific child abuser from Lara, Somerville Avenue in Waterford, was sentenced in 2016 to 14 years in prison for abusing 10 boys from 1984 to 1987. He's a former sports coach and a tallyman for Fianna Fáil, with strong family links to that party. In May of last year, Keneally also received a 4.5-year sentence for abusing 5 boys between December 1979 and March 1990. Last month, he appeared in front of a state inquiry formed to examine how state agencies and organisations handled reports of his crimes from the 1980s onwards. Formed 6 years ago following a campaign by his victims, the Commission of Investigation heard from victims, senior Gardaí, the clergy, the former South Eastern Health Board and a number of retired Fianna Fáil politicians and party members. During his appearance, Keneally was unrepentant, causing upset to those in attendance, including his victims. So what have we learned, if anything, via this inquiry so far about the mindset of this abuser and the handling of his case by authorities over many years? To discuss this with us today, I'm joined by our own reporter, Owen Dalton, who has been covering this case extensively for us. Owen, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Laura.
Owen, firstly, could you tell us about Bill Keneally? Who is he and what was his background?
Yeah, so as you were saying, he's now a man aged in his 70s, but he was reared in a family that was really steeped in politics and especially Fianna Fáil. Members of his family held seats in national and local politics from about the 1950s all the way up until just about 10 years ago in the 2010s. And this would have included his grandfather, his uncle and his cousin. Aside from that, they were a very prominent business family in Waterford. That was thanks to a long-held contract for bus routes across the region. It was a company, P&W Keneally, that was older than the state itself. When CIE was formed in the 1930s, the Keneally family were able to maintain the contract for the routes in Waterford ahead of CIE. And they would have also moved into property later. They owned several pubs in around Waterford City. And it really, I suppose, particularly with the bus routes, it would have made just the Keneally name itself just very prominent in Waterford, in the sense you couldn't avoid it if you're walking down the street.
So a very well-known family, as you mentioned there. But what crimes is Bill Keneally convicted of? What were the nature of them, and over how long a period did they take place?
Yeah, so Keneally, I suppose, as we were saying, he was first sentenced in 2016. That was after he pleaded guilty to sexually assaulting 10 boys in the 1980s. He was only last year, he was handed an additional 4.5-year sentence. In terms of the nature of them, the court cases and the inquiry themselves have heard that he would have submitted the victims to forms of torture. Very distressing, I suppose, details around the abuse that would have taken place either in his family home, in woodland areas, in other parts of Waterford in the southeast. There's allegations that it took place at, I suppose, sports aligned tournaments in other parts of the country. I suppose Keneally himself, he had worked as an accountant. That's what he was trained as. But he was, as we'll hear, he was involved in several sports organizations, several sports clubs, all of which have been referred to throughout the inquiry, from basketball to GAA.
So the very, very serious end of the spectrum on these crimes, and over a very long period of time, and he is convicted of those. So what then, Owen, sparked the new inquiry? What is it trying to get to the bottom of here?
So this was even touched on very recently, even by the chairman. It's a retired High Court judge, Michael White, and he was actually explaining to Keneally himself what Keneally had come into the inquiry, as we were saying. And he was explaining that the commission's job is not to examine the crimes themselves that were committed, that he's convicted for, but how the complaints of child abuse were handled by agencies ranging from Garda Síochána to the old South Eastern Health Board, now the HSE, the Diocese of Waterford and Lismore, and more. There are several referred to in the terms of reference, including, say, Basketball Ireland. The time frame is roughly around the 1980s to early 1990s, but it has expanded and it's looked at other things. It's also looked at how members of Fianna Fáil and who were then elected TDs, handled complaints, particularly in the early noughties.
So just to paint a clear picture for our listeners then, Owen, how many people knew about Keneally's crimes by the late 80s?
So what I might do is, I suppose what's pivotal to the inquiry is what led to Keneally's contact with the guards in the late 80s. Really, it comes down to an interview that took place between Keneally and two of the most senior Gardaí in Waterford, the acting chief superintendent and an inspector. And that happened in Christmas week, 1987. That interview came about because complaints had been made by the father of one boy, in particular to Gardaí. That led them to contact Keneally's uncle, who was at that stage a former Fianna Fáil TD by a similar name, Billy Keneally, who's now deceased. Billy Keneally arranged for his nephew to come in and be interviewed by Gardaí in Waterford Garda Station. And really what sparked this state inquiry is what happened in that interview and the months afterwards. So Keneally and a former guard, this former Garda chief superintendent for Waterford, a man called Sean Cashman, they have both said that not only did Keneally confess to abusing multiple children during this meeting, but that he was let walk free and no charges were brought. Cashman has long maintained that this was the only action he could see he could do, as he has maintained no victim wanted to come forward, and that he himself tried to mitigate this by receiving a commitment from Keneally that he would seek medical help for his abuse of children. This medical help was arranged with a now deceased doctor by another of Keneally's uncles, a man who's now deceased, a Monsignor John Shine. He was a parish priest in Tremor. And I suppose when Keneally appeared before the inquiry in recent weeks, I know we'll come to that properly later, you know, he outlined some details maybe we didn't really have a full picture on previously. And that doctor who saw him was a psychologist who also was worked for the South Eastern Health Board, was on their board of directors, but separate to that, had his own private practice. And this man basically underwent roughly about six sessions with Keneally in 1988. Keneally stopped seeing him for a period. He explained to the inquiry that he felt he needed to see this doctor again, and he estimates around the summer of 1988 he went to see him. He told him that he was, in his own words, feeling urges again. This doctor told him that he could give him medication to help, but it's alleged that both the doctor and Keneally himself were reluctant to get medication, as in the pharmacist, the chemist, would know what it was for when he was to go collect a prescription. Keneally explained to the inquiry in recent weeks that he did not want anyone to know about these meetings with the doctor. This doctor is the man himself is now deceased. Was a Dr. Michael Kelleher, a man who's often been referred to, but he died several years before these allegations came to light. And I suppose Keneally himself has said that there was further contact with Gardaí after that Christmas week interview in March of 88, but that he did not receive any contact from Gardaí until 25 years later, when Gardaí investigated a complaint which eventually saw him jailed. But now we're going into 2013 for that.
So very complex time frame there, but a number of parties involved, and understandably the inquiry looking to get to the heart of this. What then, Owen, is the timeline of the general public's knowledge of Keneally then?
Yeah, so I suppose nothing was in the public domain until 2013. And that was when the Irish Times and its reporter Barry Roach broke this story about a sports coach who was still involved in a senior position in a prominent sports club, despite having admitted to abusing children some decades earlier to Gardaí. And this became known after one victim of Keneally contacted Gardaí and made a complaint after realising Keneally was still involved in one club. This was the Waterford Vikings basketball club, where Keneally had a position on the committee. From there, I suppose this was even to quite think about, Keneally actually did a number of media interviews in 2013, following that story being broken in the Irish Times. He does a television interview for RTE, in which he appears blurred out. But members of the basketball club's committee are watching that interview that evening on RTE. They recognise him from the image, and they quickly hold a meeting. And from there, Keneally is contacted and he resigns from the club. Away from maybe the wider knowledge through the media, what's been interesting is that the inquiry has heard different examples of how it was known in different parts of Waterford City that Keneally was a dangerous man who posed a risk to children. These allegations were swirling about. Mr Justice Michael White has himself noted how he has received evidence demonstrating that older teenagers would warn younger boys about Keneally. So that while parents may not have been entirely aware, there was a generation growing up in Waterford in the 1980s and 1990s who did know about Keneally and what he was capable of.
Owen, have we heard anything to suggest why then, despite Keneally admitting to Gardaí that he had sexually assaulted the boys, why no action was taken?
Yes, we've heard different, I suppose, sides of that. And I guess, look, just to go back to maybe just an earlier question, like we're kind of wondering who knows at this point about Keneally. We know that two very senior Gardaí at least knew. This was who became the chief superintendent in Waterford, Sean Cashman, the late Inspector PJ Hayes. There was a former TD, and there was also a school principal, and there was two senior people in the Southeastern Health Board. From there, why no action was taken? A lot of Garda evidence that for the inquiry has been taken in private. So we only have a little bit of the picture at the moment of what was said. The reason that was is because Keneally was before the courts for the most recent court case, and to not interfere with that court case, the commission sat in private. However, despite that, when the commission first opened up last September to the public, and when we were able to go along and actually report on it, it played footage from a 2016 interview that Sean Cashman gave to RTE and to their South East correspondent Damien Tiernan, and it played unedited footage of what was originally a primetime report of maybe 12, 13 minutes, carried a number of interviews with victims, very, very powerful interviews right in the aftermath of the sentencing, but carried interviews with Cashman and PJ Hayes on why they took the actions they did. And I suppose Cashman insisted in that interview, and we've heard since he is held to the same point in the inquiry, that there was no cover-up at all. He has maintained that he believes Gardaí did the best they could in how they dealt with the allegations against Keneally in 1987. Cashman outlined that he'd been contacted by a businessman who had been told his son was being abused by Keneally, and that this 15-year-old boy was one of a number of boys who were being lured to Keneally's house for basketball lessons. This father told Cashman that his son could not be interviewed, and so that's what led, as Cashman has outlined, to contact Keneally's uncle to try to arrange an interview. And that's where we get that 1987 Christmas week interview. It's been interesting, that unedited interview that we got to see for the very first time. Like we see Cashman describes Keneally as a broken man in that interview. He says that he was absolutely emotional, that he was trembling like a leaf. And Cashman, I suppose he was describing what Keneally seemed like in this interview. This man, he was, I suppose, bear in mind, Keneally's now in his 70s, but this age, Keneally was a man in his 30s, maybe his late 30s. He says that Keneally told the guards, "I know why I'm here, lads," and that he was glad to be here and that he wanted to get help.
It just strikes me, Owen, when you describe that the Gardaí were very much focused on Keneally here. But what about the victims? Now, as you say, they didn't have testimony that they could go on, but there was a clear understanding here that there were victims in this case, but the focus was very much on Keneally himself.
This has been something the guards have been criticised by barristers representing the victims and by a child protection expert, which I will come to as well. But obviously that's like, you know, Ray Murderway is a barrister representing one group of victims. He said, like, would this not have amounted to victim blaming? And particularly, you know, there was one section of that interview that was played for the first time where Cashman said that the irony of the situation, in his words, was that he received help actually from the former Fianna Fáil TD. He received help from Keneally himself, the abuser, but he got absolutely no help from any injured party. And those were his words. In a section of the interview never broadcast, Cashman explained why he believed the victims, quote, weren't coming forward even as years passed. Cashman told RTE that Bill Keneally wasn't dragging victims out of their homes and school. And in his own words again, quote, young people of that age have a lot of curiosity. And this is where Ray Murderway, that barrister, raised the possibility of victim blaming. So look, that is Cashman's side of it. He has maintained that he did not have the evidence to charge Keneally.
As you said, Owen, a lot of the Garda evidence was heard in private and before the public hearing, so they haven't had a chance to respond to some of this. So we'll have to wait until the commission issues its findings to be fully aware of everything. But you've mentioned the survivors of this abuse who are central to this story. Can you tell us just how instrumental those survivors have been in bringing the case to this inquiry?
I think particularly after the sentencing in 2016, a group of these survivors really did ramp up and push for this state inquiry to be established. And some of the key people there who have waived their right to anonymity would be the likes of Jason Clancy and Colin Power, Kevin Keating, Paul Walsh, Barry Murphy and Jerry Milan. I know at one stage they were touring county councils for a period, and the idea there was to get the county councils and the councillors that were elected to essentially pass motions to write to Justice Minister Charlie Flanagan. But they were out doing interviews, they were making videos, they were speaking very, very powerfully about the really horrific stuff that was done to them. There was one video I know we reported on in the Journal at the time, and this is going back about 6 years ago, that they made one over Christmas one time. And I think it was Colin Power who said it, that, you know, it's, or it was actually, apology, it was Colin Power and Barry Murphy both said it, that this is kind of Waterford's secret and it hasn't been fully dealt with. And I suppose it was that they were able to speak so powerfully about that so regularly. Prior to that, Jason Clancy, who has been ever present at the inquiry, he is the man who in 2012, he made a complaint to Gardaí, which eventually led to Keneally's arrest. But he was one of the group of 10 in that first case. But he was motivated because he had seen that Keneally was still involved in this basketball club, and he couldn't understand how that was. And he has spoken of how, and the inquiry has heard this, of how he was refreshing the page on the internet, that Keneally was the point of contact for the club. And I know the club themselves have said they were not aware. The Vikings, they said they were not aware of the allegations, that they were never made aware by Gardaí of this historically. And Basketball Ireland have said the same, it should be said. But I suppose the victims have been pushing this along the way, and they have been extremely critical of the response by a lot of the state agencies involved here. And they just have been instrumental, really, in getting this running, and I suppose keeping a light shone on it. Because look, Laurie, we know ourselves the amount of these cases that it's very difficult to get these, to be featured regularly, to be covered regularly, but then also to actually to have the state respond to it at the same time.
What led, you mentioned the complaint in 2012, Owen, what led to that prosecution then in 2016?
The lead investigator from that investigation was an Anthony Pettit. He is now the chief superintendent of the Waterford Carlow Kilkenny region. And essentially, Gardaí were able to speak to and get, I suppose, a number of men to come forward and to press ahead with this case that Keneally pleaded guilty to these charges from, I believe, 85 to 87. From there, Anthony Pettit has done extra work looking at, are there other victims? That's where we do get the additional court case. But it was very interesting. He was presenting the findings of this report in recent months to the inquiry. And Gardaí believed that we have 15 victims on the record through the courts. He believes, and Gardaí believed, that there may be twice as many. He specifically said there may be 29 victims. And that is basically from the information Gardaí have gathered from people who have said they have been abused, they don't want to go forward with it, to also they, you know, it was very sad. Speaking of Anthony Pettit was speaking that there is one person they know has died by suicide, and they have reason to suspect that they were also a victim. But we'll likely never know the full story of how many victims there were, but certainly 15 through the courts, but Gardaí believe 29.
And Owen, the child protection expert Kieran McGrath did tell the commission now, didn't he, that there were chances to stop Keneally earlier. What did he say?
Aside from that kind of more narrow period of, say, 87 to maybe the early 90s, there have been a number of allegations and claims that there were reports about Keneally prior to that. So Kieran McGrath said that there was a missed opportunity to apprehend Bill Keneally much earlier. This included in 1985 when a 14-year-old boy allegedly went into Waterford Garda Station to tell the guard manning the desk that Keneally was abusing him. He named him as his abuser, but it is alleged this boy was told he needed to leave and come back with an adult. The boy did not feel comfortable telling his parents. He left. And it should be said, we reported on this in the journal only a few months ago, like, there is a case that has been taken now against An Garda Síochána Síochána in relation to that. And it's an example of how the case remains live in other means. There have been other allegations made at the inquiry that there were complaints about Keneally. There was concerns or suspicions about Keneally in one GAA club in the 1960s. Like, this is going back much earlier. There is, Mr. Justice White has noted himself that they have heard evidence that Keneally was potentially abusing people in the 1960s, certainly in the 1970s. And he is convicted as in the courts as having abuse having started in 1979. But we have heard different examples now of this going back much earlier. We've heard different examples of Gardaí. One man has told inquiry of how he remembers when he was a teenager, when he was already being groomed and abused by Keneally, being approached by two Gardaí in a pub and being told, be careful around Bill Keneally. We have a file as long as your arm down at the station about him. And
nothing being done is the implication here.
The implication, the inquiry has heard that those Gardaí were brought up and they denied ever saying this to the boy. So we have all these other kind of different claims. Bill Keneally himself was asked about this. He was asked about, was he stopped at a checkpoint and with a boy that he was one of his victims in the 1980s, and was the boy told to get out and go home, to walk home by the guard, and Keneally was to drive on away from him. Bill Keneally says this didn't happen. But we do have other evidence saying that this did happen. So we have all these different kind of instances. Mr. Justice White is going to have to, I suppose, come to some conclusions around them, but there are competing narratives.
A huge body of work there from Mr. Justice White, in fairness. What's unusual, I think, Owen, about this inquiry is that not only did we hear from all of these state agencies and other witnesses and the survivors of this abuse, but we have heard from the perpetrator himself. Pretty unusual appearances from Keneally.
And it was bizarre. There's really no other word for it. And we're not done hearing from Mother. He's due to come back again quite shortly. But yeah, Keneally was brought to the Law Library in Dublin City Centre from the Midlands Prison in Portlaoise. And it was, you know, the room was packed. And it's a public hearing. Anyone can walk in off the street actually and go into it. As you can imagine, it's not really advertised. But, you know, the room was packed with survivors of his abuse, their family members. And yeah, and it was very interesting. Like, when he comes into the room, he's carrying a file of documents in a shopping bag. He's scanning the room immediately.
And now, he's a man in his 70s now.
He is. You know, he's like some people have come in and you know, have been in ill health. He came in and he was, I think the best way, he was probably looking forward to this. He came in, he was scanning the room, not the front of the room, he was looking at the back of the room.
And he was there voluntarily, we should say. He was asked to appear and he agreed.
He agreed. He wasn't compelled.
He wasn't compelled to go. Yeah.
No, exactly that. And, you know, when he began giving evidence, he was extraordinarily defiant. He was, and particularly when he was talking about his crimes against the men who were present, despite his convictions, of which he pleaded guilty to all of them eventually, but particularly for the first 10 victims, he claimed that grooming accusations against him were exaggerated. He argued that the abuse was consensual, and he then questioned why it took 30 years for some victims to come forward. As you can imagine, this caused outrage among the survivors and their families. It should also be said, some of Keneally's other outlandish claims, just they drew laughter from like the men in the room that were abused by him. The chairman, Michael White, he intervened at one point. He was warning Keneally that the hearing was going to be turned into a bit of a circus if it was to carry on this way. And he interrupted him at one stage, almost shouting at him to remind him that the stuff that he was saying he had some familiarity with, but he was a bit vague on reminding him that he had pleaded guilty to these exact things. And you know, I suppose aside from this, you know, Keneally, this is the thing, like what maybe did he appear as? And that's something I've been asked. And he was just very defiant. His voice was carrying across the room. I suppose maybe that gives you kind of an
which must be absolutely, no matter how much work you've done on your survival of these horrendous crimes, to have the perpetrator sit there and not even acknowledge. It should be said, he's not the first sexual abuser, paedophile, perpetrator to deny the claims against them, regardless of the situation. So, but it must have been really harrowing for family members of victims and the victims themselves.
And there were one or two who got up and left during it, when there was basically, they were either being referred to or their close friends were being referred to. Keneally, there was other points, like he was, I suppose, expressing anger. He was very angry that he said that he would have served 17 months for the offences if he had actually been dealt with in 1987. Rather than the sentences being piled on top of each other. So I suppose, like, aside from that, like, there did come a point, though, in those couple of days that he was giving evidence, that the barristers, there's two groups of victims essentially being represented, and there's no real reason why there's two groups of victims, it's just the way it's kind of fallen. But the barristers for both those different groups, they, I suppose, were almost trying to remind Keneally, remind the room as well, maybe even remind the reporters there of, you know, the very serious stuff against this man. They were talking about how Keneally was someone who would regularly take photos of his victims. He would use them to blackmail them. The boys involved viewed them as a threat against speaking up. I know Keneally on that. He was saying that, you know, he simply did this for the thrill and for gratification. He was saying it wasn't for blackmail, as if that makes it any better. And there was one other particular interaction that they had that I think stood out to a lot of the room. Ray Murdaway, again, one of the barristers for the victims, he was asking Keneally if he ever kept a list containing victims' names or their dates of birth. Would this have been something that might have ever been found? And Keneally was just laughing, kind of back at him almost, and just pointed at his head and just said, "I kept them all in here." And like that kind of drew kind of a almost like an intake of breath, I think, for a lot of people there. Not the only one that day. There was testimony read aloud by another barrister, Barry McGrory for Phoenix Law. He recalled one boy's experiences of abuse by Keneally, and it was really, really distressing, it has to be said. But like, it's worth, I think, just kind of reminding like people what he did to these people. Was talking that this boy was tied up and tortured by Keneally at his home. He read aloud the evidence, I think, again, tried to remind people what happened. Quoting directly from the evidence here, "He kept pulling on a string, and as he is pulling on the string, it's digging into my legs, cutting. At this part, I start crying. I'm told to shut up because the neighbours might hear. Meanwhile, he, Bill Keneally, is laughing through all of this."
Absolutely just appalling, harrowing, the worst kind of sexual abuse.
Yeah. And another, like, and this, I suppose, you could probably get a sense of the anger coming from, I suppose, even the legal representatives. And, you know, we had another barrister reminding Keneally that same day, and like, there was a lot of anger, I think, in the room, that, you know, one of his victims was sitting right there. This was a man who had looked up to Keneally as an uncle, and that Keneally had bought him football jerseys. And Ray Murdaway, I can remember, he was urging Keneally to just show some respect, because he was sitting there laughing. He was enjoying himself, is the best way to put it. And I suppose just to this is something maybe Michael White, the chairman, had mentioned. He didn't want this to be turned into a circus, and it was in danger of being. The inquiry did learn things from this, and, you know, it learned different things about Keneally. It learned stuff about his connections, I suppose, with the different people involved a bit more. Among them was something we'd never heard of before, that he says he was offered a seat by Fianna Fáil to sit on the council with the potential that he would be a mayor of Waterford within 2 years. Trying to I suppose, figure out who this man was at the time. We know what he is now, but trying to figure out, like, what was his standing in the 1980s and the 1990s. That is his claim, that he was offered a seat at that point, and that it was... he declined to take it, and he explained the reason why. This was in the early 90s. He was afraid that if he took it, it would bring the skeletons back out of the closet from the allegations in 1987. And so he decided to keep quiet. He did still maintain an important role in the, I suppose particularly election time, also canvassing time for Fianna Fáil in terms of tallies. Something we haven't touched on at all, Laura, here is that, like, you know, allegations arose again about him in the early noughties, and his cousin, Brendan Keneally, very similar name again. He was a TD up until 2011. He has explained that his actions of why he didn't alert the authorities when he learned that his cousin had abused children some decades earlier. There are any number of kind of threads to go into here. One interesting thing, again, I think, of who this man is. When Keneally was sentenced in 2016, as part of that, as part of any of these kind of court cases, he did undergo a lot of medical evaluation. He underwent a lot of psychiatric treatment, and there was some more than 100 plus hours done with him by one doctor in particular. And that report was provided to the sentencing judge, Eugene O'Kelly, in 2016, and Mr. Justice White has quoted from it extensively at different points over the last several months. And it noted that, you know, Keneally was very calculated in his grooming and in his manipulation, in his blackmail of his victims. We've heard other kind of, I suppose, analysis from Kieran McGrath, a child protection expert, and he said that, you know, Keneally bears a lot of resemblances to a psychopath, that he meets a lot of the definitions around that. I suppose as well, it's again trying to get that picture of someone. He was a sports coach, yes. He was also an accountant. He had decent roles within the community, within a political party, which one of the main political parties in the country, the main political party in the country for a long time. He was definitely someone that did hold a position, in his community, and from a very well-respected family at that point in his community.
And we've heard this so many times before about abusers from a respected family, a definition of social standing. It's been an extraordinary inquiry, Owen, really. What are the next steps for it, and who else could it potentially hear from now?
So we will continue to hear from Bill Keneally himself. His evidence is not done. It's due to come back. We don't know quite yet, but certainly in the coming weeks, I think it will be quite soon. We were told it would be after Easter. There is always a possibility that other witnesses may be added. We've had some added late, I suppose, in the last maybe 3-4 months. These have ranged from one man who spoke of being groomed by Keneally, but spoke of allegations of the potential that money was exchanged by other members of the Keneally family to that man's family. These are things that the inquiry may decide to investigate further, rather than just leave that allegation kind of hanging there. At the moment, it is just Bill Keneally. This inquiry could finish up in a couple of weeks, and we could be getting ready then for the judge's report.
And what type of finding could it come to, and what did the survivors then own hoped the outcome could be here?
So the judge will have to decide, I suppose, look, what was the response of all these different agencies? And did it meet the standard of the time? From what survivors hope the outcome will be, I think a big motivation for them is they wanted the truth on what happened. They wanted to understand exactly what was happening in the different responses to the different allegations, going back from the 1980s, but even earlier than that, but then also in the 1990s and again in the noughties. Where it could go from there, I think I've already mentioned, there is a legal case that has been taken in the last couple of months against Gardaí and Bill Keneally himself, by one victim. That's over the allegation that this man, when he was a boy, was turned away from Waterford Garda Station when he tried to report Keneally. We may see other similar cases like that. Like, I suppose, look, one of the things that stands out to me again about the cases, and this was something that was noted by, I think, Kieran McGrath when he came in to do his report on the child protection side. Keneally, whenever he was asked, for a long period, whenever he was asked about this by anyone in authority, was he abusing children? He didn't lie. He told them every time. He told them in 1987. He opened up to it later in the early noughties, and he opened up to it again when, for the successful prosecution from 2013 to 2016. I guess it's from there, the fact that he was not hiding it himself at these points in time, the commission is trying to figure out what happened with these. And again, there's another we haven't really spoke about, the South Eastern Health Board. There's allegations there of a file that was prepared on Keneally following admissions by two boys who were being being evaluated for potential abuse. And this file, unfortunately, we don't quite understand what happens to it. It doesn't turn up until years later. And look, in those organisations, the HSC's legal representation has said that they were doing everything they could at that time, and that they took the steps they needed to take. So we'll see from there what the judge says.
It'll be interesting to see what the outcome of this inquiry is. Finally, Owen, you're based in the southeast in the Waterford area. It must have been such an horrendous blow to a lot of ordinary people in that area who think, how could this have happened over so long?
Yeah, and I think it comes down to like the Keneally's, again, their standing in the area. That goes from the bus company that just is a name that's still there, to just the family itself, and that they were very prominent in politics throughout all this time. And look, I know from my experience, the different places that I've been in Waterford over the years, before working for the Journal, you end up meeting people who have been affected by the case quite directly in some cases. And, you know, because at the end of the day, Waterford is not somewhere that's the size of Dublin. It's a city, but it's a population of, you take in its hinterland and everything, it's maybe about 70,000, 80,000 people. And so it's understandable that this would really, I think, tear through a lot of families. And it's the details itself of the case are kind of numbing in other ways. And in other times, you're just taken aback by them.
Well, we'll keep an eye. And Owen, thanks for all your work you've done on this story. And we'll keep covering it and see what the inquiry comes out with. Look, thanks so much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Laura.
Thanks again to Owen Dalton for joining us today. You've been listening to the Explainer podcast by thejournal.ie. This episode was brought to you by senior producer Nikki Ryan and executive producer Sinead O'Carroll. If you'd like to support all the work we do here, head to thejournal.ie/contribute to make a one-off donation or become a monthly subscriber. And of course, you can always leave a review and a rating wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.